Can you put your headset on?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh,
All right. So today we're on Daf Yud Zayin. Can you all hear me? I hope. Today we're on Daf Yud Zayin in Shkalim. Actually, Gavriel Aronoff sponsored the Daf. Tomorrow, and tomorrow was his brother's yahrzeit. So I mentioned it last night. I should have mentioned it, I guess, tonight. It's not quite the yahrzeit in a few hours, but the learning is Leilui Neshama of, I think, Immanuel ben Avraham, Zichrono Levracha. That's a real, excuse me, that's Gavriel Aronoff's brother. Okay, so we're on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Let me go to Tet Zayin Amud Beis. A few lines from the bottom on Tet Zayin Amud Beis. Okay, so the Mishnah, three lines from the bottom. Halacha Beis Matnitin Hechanayu Hishtacha Vayot Ha'elu. So the Mishnah on Tetvav had mentioned that there were 13 places where a person had to bow down in the Beis HaMikdash. 13 places that a person should bow down. So where were these places? So the Gemara says, now the first opinion we're going to hear in the Mishnah is opposite all the gateways into the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, Arba b'tzafon, four on the north side, v'arba b'drom, four on the south side, shlosh b'mizrach, three on the east, u'shnayim b'marav, two on the west. So that should add up to 13. K'neged shloshasa sharim, like opposite or corresponding to the 13 gates into the Beis HaMikdash. Says, dromiyim smuchim l'marav. Now, the Mishnah, and there's a nice chart on page 17a2 in the Art Scroll. I'm sure you have a chart in the Steinsaltz also, Robert. But he says that Dromim smuchim lamarav. Now he's doing on the southern wall, beginning from the westernmost gate. So he says Shar HaElyon. Shar HaElyon is the upper gate. In other words, the Har HaBayit was on a slope, so and even the Beis HaMikdash is on a slope, so you're ever ascending. So the Shar HaElyon is at the highest point, and as you can see, it's like corresponding to where the Kodesh Kodashim is. He says, then Shar HaDelek, you have the kindling gate, and they say it's near the Lishkat HaEtzim. The wood was near there. He says, Shar HaBechorot, then the Shar HaBechorot, where they would bring the firstborn animals in as a korban, and then Shar HaMayim, the gate of water. But Lamina Kroshmo Shar HaMayim, why was it called Shar HaMayim? Shabo Machnisim Slochi, the top line in Yuzayim and Aleph, Shalnisa HaMayim Bechag. That's where they would bring like this jug of water on Sukkot, you know, with the water libation. There was a halacha Moshe Sinai, and the Gemara in Sukkah mentions it. That normally they pour wine on the Mizbeach, but on Sukkot they poured water. That's the Nisa Kamayim. That's where they would bring the water through there. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, Bo Amayim Mefachim Vatim Liyot Yotzei Mitachat Miftan Habayit. So Reb Lezer ben Yaakov says, no, it was called Shar HaMayim for a different reason. We'll see in the Gemara there are Nevuot from in Yechezkel and in Zechariah that speak about a stream that in the future is going to come from the Kodesh Kadashim and get larger and larger as it spreads out. So that body of water is going to come through where Shar HaMayim is. There's a machloket among the Mefarshim, whether it means it literally or it means it symbolically, metaphorically, but that's where it's called Shar HaMayim. Now, then the Mishnah says on line three, U'matan b'tzafon, and then correspondingly on the north side of the Beis HaMikdash, Lumatan b'tzafon, smuchim b'marav, in other words, beginning proceeding from the west. In other words, he says Shar Yechaniah. You have the gate of Yechaniah, who was one of the last kings of Yehuda, and the Gemara is going to explain that. Well, the Mishnah will explain why it's called Shar Yechaniah. Shar HaKorban, the gate of the Korban, and it's called the gate of the Korban. He says because oh, sorry, one second. Shar HaKorban. Yeah, it's called Shar HaKorban because he says the Kachi Kadashim were shechted in the northern part, and that was the entranceway where that is. Shar HaNashim, the gate for the women. And there's machlok in the Gemara where the women can be someich on their korban or not. So according to one opinion, they could be someich. According to the other opinion, they're not allowed to be someich. So either it means the women would go in there to do smicha on the korban or just to be near the korban. He says, and then Shar HaShir, the gate for the song, and it means that they would bring the musical instruments through that gate. But Lamina Kreshmo Shar Yechaniah, why was it called Shar Yechaniah? That was that was the first gate in the northwest corner, he says Shabo Yatsa Yechaniya Begaluto, because that's where Yechaniya, he went into Galus, he left there, and that was where he took leave of the base of Mikdash, then he went. He says Sheba Mizrach, now in the east side of the base of Mikdash, we have Sharni Kanur. Sharni Kanur, remember those are the gates that a miracle occurred. We'll have it in the Gemara Masechet Yoma. It's going to tell us in another month or so. I think it's around Lamed Gimel in Yoma. It says that Nikanor Nasu Nisim Ladal Totav, miracles occurred to his doors. He upgraded the doors. He was taking them from Alexandria, and then there was a storm. Anyway, so he says, so Sharni Kanor is one gate. Ushnei Pishpishin Hayulo, Echami Mino, Echami Smolo. There were two smaller entranceways, one on the right, one on the left. So that counts as three. He says, Ushnaim B'ma'arav, there were two other openings in the west. He says it didn't have a name. So Basakha Kol, that adds up to 13. And if you look in the chart, Artswell has a nice chart on 17A2, and it means that you have two openings on the western side of the base of Mikdash. That's like on the side that's sort of fitting the Kodesh Kedashim. It's like if you'd be at the Kotel, it would be like, you know, above to your right or left or whatever, somewhere around there. So those are there. Okay, so we have 13 gates. Okay, any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did in the mission so far?
Can you repeat what Rabbi Eliezer said?
Yeah, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says there was one gate called Shar Hamayim. So the first opinion in the Mishnah says it's called Shar Hamayim because it would bring the water there for the Nisach Hamayim on Sukkot. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says no, it was not called Shar Hamayim for that reason. It's called Shar Hamayim because there are Nevuot, I said from Zechariah, from Yechezkel, that prophesy that in the future, means in the third base of Mikdash, there'll be a stream of water that leaves the Kodesh Kedashim and gets larger as it goes out, and that stream goes through that shar. So there's a question among the Mefarshim whether it literally means a stream or it symbolically means a stream. It means the stream represents, you know, ruchnius and knowledge and things like that. Okay, you got it? Yosef?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's go further in the Gemara now. Okay, now we're on line 8 on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay, so the Gemara says, Manitin Abi Yossi ben Yochanan hi. So our Mishnah follows Abi Yossi ben Yochanan, the Amar Keneged Shloshasar Sha'arim, that he's the one who says that that it corresponds to the 13 gates. The 13, you know, prostrations correspond to the 13 gates. Baram Kirabanan Shivasharim Hayuba Azara. So, but according to the Chachamim, they disagree how many gates were in the Azara. So the Chachamim hold there were only 7 gates into the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, so Al Dataiz Rabbanan Heichana Yuhishtachavaud Halalu. So what were these bowing? In other words, according to the first Shita, you're bowing opposite each gate as you come to as you approach the base of Mikdash, maybe out of kavod for being in that place. So that's what the first sheet holds. The second sheet says there are only 7 gates. So what are the 13 bowings? Where and what are they about? So the Gemara says, Kehid Tarin and Taman. So it's like the Mishnah that we learn over there. It means in Masechet Midot, he says Shloshasar Pratzot Hayubo, that there were 13 breaches. There were 13 breaches in the Soreg. The Soreg is a partition around the base of Mikdash. And the Soreg, up until there, non-Jews can go up to the Soreg, and beyond that, only Jews can proceed. And it's like a lattice type of work. So it says that there were Shoshasrei Pratzot Ayubo, there were 13 breaches in the Soreg, Shepartzuma Chayavan, that the Hellenist kings in the time of Hanukkah, they breached it. In other words, they like the Hashkafa is, and I spoke about this between Mincha Maariv and Shul, and there's a piece from one of the Ramim at Shalvim. I just don't remember his name right now, but he said the idea is they wanted to breach the difference between Jews and non-Jews. You know, like you know, everybody can come here, more universalistic. So he says, "V'chazru v'gadrim b'nei chashmonai." So the chashmonaim, when they took over, they resealed those openings. He says, "V'gazru kenegdan shoshesrei hishtachavaot." So, but they decreed that when you come to where those openings were, each time you have to bow down. And it's like in Hodah to a Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're able to restore things to the way that they were. All right. Everybody good so far? Any questions?
Wait, so you had the breaches include the gates, right?
No. That's a different cheshbon. In other words, the soreg is a partition around the Beis HaMikdash. It's outside the wall. There's a partition around the Beis HaMikdash. In that partition meant is where Jews can go beyond there, and non-Jews can't go beyond that point. Right. So in that soreg, they made 13 breaches. And then the Hashmonaim came and sealed up the breaches. So they said, when you go near where the breach had been, you bow down.
So this has nothing to do with the gates. This
right,
is separate.
Right,
okay,
correct,
thank correct. You.
Okay.
Right, now, did you have to bow down all 13 times, or just
no,
when
no,
you
no.
walk
it means,
past
no,
one of
no,
the
no,
places?
No, right. If you're at that place, no. If you're at that place, you bow down. If you're not, you're not. Okay. All right, I got to keep moving. Okay, we have a
in other words,
daf.
You don't have to go there specifically.
Right. Okay, I have to keep moving. I asked your mechila, but it's a long daf, and I want to make sure we get through it. Okay, so I'll pause in another 30 lines or 40 lines or so. Okay, now the Gemara takes up this nevuah that I spoke about, the stream leaving the Kodesh Kadashim. So we mentioned in the Mishnah, as Yosef had asked before, about the Shar Hamayim. Remember, we said there's a gate of water, and Reb Lezer ben Yaakov in the Mishnah said that the gate of the water wasn't because of the water you're bringing in for the Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkot. It's because of this nevuah in the future that there's going to be a stream coming out from the Kodesh Kadashim. So Ketiv, it says, now here, first the Gemara quotes a Pasuk in Zechariah. Now this Pasuk, this is the Haftorah for the first day of Sukkot. For the first day of Sukkot, it talks about Melchemet Gog u'Magog, which is this cataclysmic war that takes place in the future. And it says, after the war is over, so then all the Goyim will come to Yerushalayim lachog et chag haSukkot, which is why we lay it on Sukkot. But in the Haftorah it mentions, he says, "Uchtiv ayabayamahu yisu mayim chayim Yerushalayim v'gomer." On that day, spring water will come out of Yerushalayim. This spring will come out from the Kodesh Kadashim. So, and again, I mentioned this machloket whether among the Mefarshim, does it mean like a real spring with water, or does it mean like symbolically, like water will come out? But water always represents Torah, you know, knowledge of God, that type of thing. So he says, so Tani, so it was taught in a Braisa, Kodesh Kadashim, out of Parochet, Karne Sile Vikilai. Like, in other words, the stream is going to start very narrow and get bigger and bigger as it proceeds. So it says, initially, it's like the antennae of Sile Vikilai, these snails, a very thin stream. That's from the Kodesh Kadashim to the Parochet. The Parochet is the curtain. He says, Min Parochet Amizbach HaSahav, from the Parochet to the Golden Mizbeach, which is a little bit further out, he says, Karnei Chagavim. It's like the antennae of locusts, in other words, a little bit thicker. Mizbach HaSahav Adazarot, from the Mizbach HaSahav to the Azarot, which is the courtyards, he says, Kuchut Shel Sheti. It's like the warp thread on a loom.
Loom.
Yeah, and it was the warp thread is the thread that's like permanently there. And that's its state. And it was like as you're facing the loom, it goes from left to right. That's the warp thread. It's thicker than what came before. Min Hazarot on Miftan Abayit, from the Azarot, from the courtyards until the entranceway of the Beis HaMikdash, he says, Kuchuchel Erev. It's like the wolf thread. The wolf thread is the thread that you're, I didn't say right before, I'm sorry. The warp thread is going up and down. I'm sorry. The warp thread is the permanent thread. It's going like if you're facing it, it's like, you know, north, south. And then the wolf thread is going left to right. In other words, so that's like a thicker thread that you're weaving through it. He says, Mikan ve'elach kimi pihapach. From that point forward, it's like the opening of a jug. In other words, the point is the stream starts out like really thin, like, you know, like a thread or whatever, and then it gets thicker and thicker and thicker. He says, that's the first pasuk he quotes. Then it says, Ketiv, he quotes another pasuk. Now he's shifting to Yechezkel. So this is not part of a Haftorah. It says, it means the Yechezkel has a vision and he sees the third base of Mikdash. So he says, he says, like water was trickling out from the right side. When the man, like he sees this malach who's like guiding him through the base of Mikdash, he says, on the east side, the measuring stick in his hand, he measured out 1,000 amot. He says, and he led me in the water. May afsayim means ankle deep water. This is, in other words, Yechezkel sees himself in the third base of Mikdash, and a Malach is guiding him through, and he sees in measuring out 1,000 amod, and now he's in water ankle deep. And then that's the end of the pasuk, and the Gemara says Adkar Sula. In other words, the Gemara is explaining what is Me Afsayim. So it means ankle deep water. Then back to the pasuk, or back to the psukim. By Amod Elef, then he measured out 1,000 amod by Vireni B'mayim, Me Birkayim. Then he brought me in water, which was up to the knees. And then the Gemara explains, ad bir kaye, in other words, till his knees. The Gemara is just explaining. He says, then, vayamad elef ayvirini meimot nayim. Then he took resin 1,000 amod, and now the water is till his loins. Like he says, ad mat naya. Mikan va'elech vayamad elef nachala shaluchal avur. He says, at that point, he measured 1,000 amod, and now I could not even, you know, take, you know, transfer, you know, cross the water. It was so, nobody could cross the water. And the Gemara says, one second, give me one second. He says, So now the Gemara explains, Afilu biranim gidola in yichola avorbo. Even a big ship couldn't, you know, pass over that water. My taima, why is that? And then now he goes back to again the psukim. It says v'tzia dir lo yavrenu, because like even a big ship couldn't pass over the water. Mipnei mawai ki gawa mayim ki sahu. He says because the water had gotten to be swelled and there were sahu waters, and we don't know what sahu waters are. We must be patient. So he says mahu me sahu. What was me sahu? Mila shut. In other words, you couldn't swim across the water. It was too strong, the current, everything. So Amar Rav Huna says, Ba'atrin karu l'shayata sachvana. He says, in my neighborhood, they call swimming sachvana. In other words, so you couldn't swim, and it means that a boat couldn't go across this water. He says, and then the Gemara quotes another pasuk to strengthen the idea that sahu means swimming. This is a nevuah again from that was in Yeshaya. He says that it's talking about Moav. Uparas yada bikirbo kasher yifros hasocha l'schot. He says that that means God will stretch his hand like a swimmer stretching out to swim, and he's going to like smite Moav. But the point is that Shia is swimming. Now, we have in the Gemara mahu l'schot, but again here in Yerushalmi, it's like all the girsaus. You got to really focus on the girsaus. So if you look in the Gra, and the Gra is very helpful with this, and Gimel in the Gra, he says my meisachu. So the Gra says we're going back to defining what is meisachu. In other words, he said the water is going to be meisachu. So we said meisachu means like you can't even swim across it. But he says am Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Bun. Rabbi Yossi says, the son of Rabbi Bun says, "Mayin d'malin ba'alma, waters that are spoken about in the entire world." In other words, it's like everybody's talking about the greatness of the river he has, or otherwise that the world will be capable of speaking. In other words, if a person's mute and he drinks the water, he'll be able to speak. The idea is that the water is like tremendous ruchnius. In other words, like it opens up to people and becomes greater as it leaves the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, like the Torah gets amplified as people hear and absorb it. That's the way I would say, and it makes a big impact on the world. And so he says, "K'tiv bayomahu yemakor niftach lebeit David ulyoshvei Yerushalayim lechatad l'nidah." So again, we're going to Zechariah. It says that on that day, a spring will be opened up for the house of David, either for the Beit David, and for the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, lechatat ulanida, for a chatat and for a nida. So Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman, b'shem Rav Yonatan, mi Beit David b'yad Yoshua Yerushalayim, he is interpreting the pasuk that this stream of water is coming out, and he says from Beit David, which he takes is like the Mesudas David. You know that I'm sure you've been through Yerushalayim. Like you have like there's a place in Mesudas David. You know, it's Migdal David, right? It's like in the I think the southeast corner or the southwest corner. Southwest corner of Yerushalayim is, they have like Har Tzion. That's what I should say. Har Tzion. In other words, from Beit David is where Har Tzion is, Mount Zion. So Har Tzion. So he says, Mi Beit David be'al Yoshev Yerushalayim, from Har Tzion until like the rest of Yerushalayim, he says, Sheirim Lanida. He says that the waters would be kasher for Anita. In other words, spring water, in other words, Anita can immerse herself in a mikveh, which is gathered megashamim, or she can immerse herself in spring water. So it's kasher l'nida ula katat. Katat here means the water that's used with the para aduma. He says, mikan ve'elach mei ta'aruvot heim, sher l'nida upsulun mei katat. From that point forward, as the water proceeds, other waters get mixed in with it, and it's like rainwater gets mixed in with it. So it would still be kasher for Anida, but pasul mechatat, pasul for mechatat. All right, give me 1 second. Give me 1 second. 1 second. 1 second. 1 second. 1 second. Let me just take a look. 1 second. Yeah, he says that, in other words, the majority of rainwater will be mixed in. So I guess if the majority of rainwater, I assume he's saying like the water would then gather into a mikveh, would be kasher for a mikveh, because there's more rainwater. But the paraduma has to be the spring water. All right, let me just do a few more lines, and I'll pause. Okay, he says, Amr Blazar, mi Beit David be'al Yoshev. This is a different opinion. Amr Blazar, mi Beit David be'al Yoshev Yerushalayim, from Har Tzion, the way I'm explaining, till the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, Sherim Lanido L'Chatat. That's the same. Mikan ve'elach make Katafri Sodhein Sulanido L'Chatat. It's like the water that's coming down an incline, in other words, the water on a slope. The water's coming down a slope, so that's psul l'nida ulechatat. In other words, the sloping water is psul for anida. So the one approach he has here in the art scroll is, if it's coming down a slope, it's not considered like mayim chayim, and so it's he says it's not only invalid for use as a mikvah, I assume because it's coming down a slope, but it's also invalid for in the mechatat. Okay, Ketiv, by Yom Rei Hamayim Ha'ele Yotzim El Haglila HaKadmona. So again, in the Nevu'ah Yechezkel, the Malach says to him, these waters are going to the eastern Galilee, Zayam Shel Samchu. That's referring to the Yam Shel Samchu. Yam Shel Samchu, he said in the article, it could be the Lake Hulda. Is in the north, right? Lake Hula. What is it called? The Hula. Right? Is it called? There's a lake north of the Galilee. It's Hula, right? Hula.
Mechula?
What?
Mechula with a mem?
No, Hula. Anyway, there's a Lake Hula north of the Galilee. Anyway, so he says, V'yardu el Arava, Z'yam shel Tiberias. It'll go to the Arava, refers to the Sea of Galilee, the Lake of Tiberias. Uvau Hayama, it'll go west, the Yama Melach, go to the Yam, the Yama Melach, go to the Dead Sea, Yama Melach, not west, it goes to the Yama Melach. El Hayama Hamotzaim, it'll go to the expanding water, El Yama Hamotzaim, Zayama Gadol, that's the Mediterranean. In other words, so in this vision, he sees, like, I don't know, the waters, they're going here, there, and the other place. He says, V'lamanik rosh mo mutzayim, why is the Mediterranean called the expanding waters? K'neged shtei pamim shiatzah, corresponding to 2 times in history where the waters expanded out. Echad b'dor Enosh v'echad b'dor apalaga. Once in the generation of Enosh, Enosh was the generation where people began to do avodah zarah, that's what the Rambam brings down. And one in the dor hapalaga, also not a good situation, where they built the Migdal Bavel. So, Reb Lezer b'shem Reb Chanina b'rishoni yatsa ad Calabria. So Reb Chanina says the name. Reb Lezer says the name Reb Chanina. It was the Atlantic is expanding out. That's the way the Gemara is describing it. The Atlantic is expanding out and creating the Mediterranean. That's the way the Gemara is describing it. So, and the Gemara takes it that this occurred during times of Aveirot. So in the first time, which would have been Dor Enosh, Yatzad Calabria, it went up to Calabria. Now they said the article means like the heel of the boot of Italy, but they said not the same as the Calabria region in Italy. He says, Uvishniya Yatzad Kipe Barbaria. And the second time it went out to like the Barbary coast. It sounds like in North Africa. He says, Rabbi Acha B'Shem Rabbi Chanina B'Rishon Yatzad Kipe Barbaria. The second opinion holds that the first time it went to, it means in other words, the Mediterranean is being created. So it's going to the northern coast of the Barbary. Uvishniya Yatzad Akko. Yad Yafo. We went to Akko, and Yafo means all the way to Eretz Yisrael. So now the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Eov, Ad bo tavo v'lo tosif. You can come till here and you can't go further. He says, Ad Akko tavo, and it was Ad po tavo. The Gemara takes it is Ad Akko tavo v'lo tosif, and not any further than Akko. He says, Upo yashit. Now back in the pasuk, Upo yashit b'gaon galecho. Let me see what he says here. He says, and here, Po, your waves will flaunt their majesty. Is, one second, let me go back in the Gemara. One second, yeah. He says, Ad Yafo, and it was Upo, he's linking the word Po with Yafo. He says, Ad Yafo, Ashit Gon Golecha. In other words, until Yafo, I will allow your waves to flaunt their majesty. Okay, now the Gemara says, Nicha Yama Rabba V'Yama Demilcha. So I understand why these waters go in the vision, that the waters expand to the Mediterranean and to the Dead Sea. B'shilamit Kan, that means to make the water sweet. This sweet water is going to make those waters sweet. Yama Tisveria Yama Desamchu L'Rabot Degatam. So what? Why does it go to the Sea of Galilee? Why does it go to the Lake Chula? He says, L'rabot degatam, to increase their variety of fish that they have there. He says, Dechtibe l'minatia degatam, and it's a nevu again Yechezkel, like it means their species will be the fish, but the Gemara darshens it out, l'mine minim tia degatam, like there'll be many, many types of species of fish. Tani, we learned the Brisa, Mishmuliel, Masa Shalakli, the Tzidon. Now, Mishmuliel says, in my life, I see a lot of varieties. I went to Tzidon, which is in Lebanon, and Hezbollah in the Tabor territory now. They brought me on one plate 300 species of fish, but in the future, it'll be even more. All right, let me just pause for one second. I'm not through this whole sugya, but I've been going a long time. Okay, so who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything I said so far? Okay, I'm going to go on. Okay, let's take a look. Okay, so we're five lines above where it gets wide on Yizayim and Aleph. Now it says, V'nir pu hamayim bitzota v'gaba'av v'lo yirafu l'melech nitanu. So again, this is a pasuk in Yechezkel. So he translates it as the waters will become sweetened. This is again the Nebuah, where he sees the water leaving the base of Mikdash, and the water's going here, there, and the other place, and then it's going to sweeten all these waters. So it says the waters will become sweetened, its swamps and its pools, and they will not become sweetened, they will be set aside for salt. So the Gemara, it's a stira. It says Vinir Pumayim, things will become sweet, and then it's Velogian Pumayim, they won't become sweet. So he says, and they'll be for salt. So Ketiv Vinir Pumayim, it says they'll become sweetened. Vyar Amrit Velo Yera Pumayim, and he's saying they won't become sweetened. So the Gemara says, Makom Hu Shmo Velo Yerapu. He says there's a place that's known as Lo Yerapu, with like non-sweetened water. So he says, meaning that place, it'll be salty, but wherever the water goes, it's going to be sweet. He says, along this river, all these wonderful, you know, fruit-bearing trees will blossom forth. Its leaf won't wilt, or he says v'lo yitam piryo l'chadashav yivaker. The fruit won't cease l'chadashav yivaker. It'll become ripe in its months. So he says tani etanu to anabraisa am Rabbi Yehuda l'fishibo lamazeh tvuos. Again, this is his nevuah where Yechezkel sees the third base of Mikdash, which is in the time of the Mashiach, and this is the vision that he sees. So the Gemara says, tani am Rabbi Yehuda l'fishibo lamazeh tvuos l'shishacharashim. In this world, crops grow in 6 months. Wheat and barley take 6 months to grow. He says, "V'ilano sed l'shnemos sarchodesh," and a fruit-bearing tree takes 12 months to bear the fruit. Abala tilavo, but in the future, hatvu ose l'chodesh echad. It means in the vision, tvuul will be ripened in 1 month. He says, "V'ilano sed l'shnei chadashim." In other words, the key is tvu is half whatever the ilan is, and he says the ilan will bear fruit in 2 months. My taima means, where do you know that from? It's l'chadashav yivaker. In other words, l'chadashav, in 2 months, you'll have the fruit. That's the way he interprets the pasuk. So in 2 months, you have fruit, and the fruit normally takes a year. Tvu is half of that, 6 months. So in the future, he has a vision that fruit will take 2 months, so it means the tvu will be in 1 month. He says, Amar, the second wide line, Amar Rabbi Yossi, now a different view. Amar Rabbi Yossi, the fish woman said, Tavua sel shish chadashim. In this world, Tavua grows in 6 months. V'ilano sel shnei masar chodesh. And the tree takes 12 months to bear fruit. Abal atilavo atavua sel chamishasar yom. He thinks in the future, or his interpretation is, in the future, the tavu will take 15 days to grow. He says, V'ilan osel l'chodesh achad. And an ilan will just be in 1 month, you'll have the fruit. Why? Shkematzinu shasara tavu abime yoel l'chamishasar yom. V'kari menu ha'omer. He says, in the time of Yoel, who's one of the treasar, so the tavua, there was a miraculous event that Yoel describes, where I don't know, there was a cataclysmic, like the everything had been blighted, and then they didn't have any tavua, and then in 15 days, beginning in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the omer grew. So the omer was able to grow in 15 days, and they were able to bring the omer. So he says, my taimon was like, when it says my taimon, like, where do we know this from, that type of thing? He says, Uvnei Tzion gilu b'simchu b'Hashem Elokeichem. This is a pasuk in Yoel. Like, Bnei Tzion, like Jews, be happy with Hashem your God. Ki natam lachem et amored letzdaka. He's giving you the more tzedaka. It could be that it means a righteous teacher, or it could mean more yorez, like the early rain. He says, v'yored lachem geshem more umalkosh b'rishon. He brought down to rain, more umalkosh, more the early rain and late rain in the first month, in Nisan. So it means in those 15 days, the barley grew. So he's figuring, so the fruits take twice as long as the tavua. So if the in the future, he figures if the crops are going to grow in 15 days, the fruit are going to grow in 1 month. He says, umamekayim Rabbi Yossi l'chadashav yivaker. How does Rabbi Yossi interpret the pasuk? In its months, it'll become ripened, which we thought 2 months. So he says, b'chol chodesh v'chodesh yem vaker. It means in each month, it'll have ripened fruit. Okay, now, ba'alei l'trufa. We're back in with Yechezkel. So, its leaf will be for healing. In other words, like we had trees on sides of the river, and they're going to have fruit bearing trees, and its leaf will be for healing. So he says, Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Now again, there's different ways to interpret the next four words. I'm just doing one way, which is the way the art scroll had it. He says, Tarpe Matzitzale. He says that, in other words, you can suck. In other words, he's learning interpreting tarpe as if it's spelled with a tet. In other words, tarpe matzitzale, in other words, it could serve as food. In other words, a leaf could serve as food for one who sucks the leaf. He says, the taraf mazone, traf or trap is mazone. Traf means food. Okay, Rabbi Shmuel, chadamar lahatir pesh shalamalan. Now, we're talking about like the leaves having healing power. So Rav and Shmuel, they say, he's explaining what the leaves do. So Rav and Shmuel, Hatir Pesha Lamalon, it can open up the upper mouth. So one way is to say it'll give you restore appetite for a person that doesn't have appetite. But the other way is if it'll cure the mute person. So the mutes, the people who are mute will be able to speak when they you know, eat those leaves or suck on those leaves. V'chadamar latir pesh lamatan. And one said it's something like the lower orifice. So it could mean like to loosen the bowels, or it could mean like a woman who's infertile will become fertile from that. So he says, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, chadamar latir pe'akarot. One interpreted, so one way you could say is that if you say like the first way, in other words, let's assume that it gives you appetite is the first opinion, and the second opinion, it'll be laxative, it'll cure you of constipation. So then the second, now we're doing, then we could say here, and this is where the art school had it, says no, it means it's like gonna make the woman fertile, she'll be able to bear children. It's more miraculous than just like, you know, being able to eat and having, you know, the bowels going right. It's like it'll cure the akara and it'll make the mute speak. Now, okay, so all right, let me pause. Any questions, comments, thoughts, anything we did so far? So we covered with this river with the water, but you work on this and you come up with you look at Mefarshim and you'll see other explanations for that. Okay, so that's the Shar HaMayim. Any questions, comments, thoughts, anything we did so far? Everybody good? Okay, and by the way, Yeshua, for all of you for coming today, it's very, very nice to see.
And for you for coming and giving
Thank you. Okay, bruchim to you, bruchim to you. All right. Ruth, you need to mute yourself. Okay, good. Okay, let's see back on the Gemara. All right. So, okay, we're six lines from the bottom on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. So it says, Ulu Matan B'Tzafon V'Chulei. So we said that in the Mishnah, we said that there were gates on the north side. So the Gemara says, So when Nebuchadnezzar was, you know, coming to attack Eretz Israel, he camped out by the outskirts of Antioch. Antioch is, I think, in Turkey, right? It's a city in Turkey. Turkey has a little finger that extends like close to Syria along the Mediterranean, and there's a city there, Antioch, which is an ancient city. I once met a woman who wasn't Jewish, but she was from that city. So he says, V'yatsa Sanhedrin gedol l'kreto. Sanhedrin went to greet Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar is not good. In other words, he's the one who destroys the base of Mikdash. So he says, V'amralom, higizman abayit hazelecharev. They said, is it the time for the base of Mikdash to be destroyed? We see you're showing up here. So Amar lahen, oto shimlachti alechem tnuli v'ani holech. He says, the one that I put in charge of this country, in other words, Nebuchadnezzar had been involved with Eretz Israel, I want him. Him I want. So, Ba'u Ba'amru Le'Yehoyachin, Melech Yehudah, Yehoyachin was not the last king, but close to it. They said to Yehoyachin, Nebuchadnezzar Ba'ilach. He says, Nebuchadnezzar wants you. He says, Kemesh Shemamihen Kach, when he heard that, Natal after Chot Shel Beit HaMikdash, he took the keys of the Beis HaMikdash. He says, Allah the Gagosh Shel Eichal, he went on the roof of the top of the Beis HaMikdash. Amar lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam Shavar, Hayinu Ne'emanim Lecha. In the earlier generations, we were faithful to you. He says, Vayum after Chotecha Misurim Lanu, and your keys of your house were placed in our charge. Achshav She'einonu Ne'emanim, now we haven't been so faithful. He says, Harem aftechotecha mesurin lecha. Now the keys are given back to you. He says, Trein amoroin, chanamar zarkan, v'odlo yardu. One says, he threw them up in the air and they didn't go down, meaning they took it back in Shemayim. He says, v'chanamar ba k'min yad m'taltan miyado. One says, like a hand came and took it from him. So kevan shira'u kol, turn page, Chore Yehuda Cain, when the leaders of Yehuda saw what had taken place, and Aaron Moshe were on the top line on Yud Zayin Amud Beis, he says, Alu the Rosh Gagotein, they ascended the rooftops, Vinaflu Metu. It sounds like they jumped off and killed themselves. Hadahu Dechtiv, that's the Pasuk that says, Masage Chizayon, Malach, you know, he said, Malach Efo ki alit kulach legagot. In other words, this is a prophecy about the Valley of Vision, Yerushalayim. What has happened to you now that you have all ascended to the rooftops? He says, ki alit kulach legagot, shuot malea irhomia chule. In other words, you have been full of commotion in tumultuous city. In other words, the pasuk is reflecting like that he says. And the pasuk continues on. You're not the victims of the sword or casualties of war, because the Gemara is explaining the jumping off the rooftops. You know, it's interesting. I was looking at today. There's a Gemara in the end of Tanis, which has a similar story about the destruction of the first base of Mikdash with the Pirchei Kohuna, where the young Kohanim at the time of the destruction go up and throw up the keys to Shemayim. All right. Any questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far?
What happened to Yehoyachin?
So he was taken by Nebuchadnezzar.
He was taken.
In other words, he says here the last three kings of Yehuda were Yehoyakim, his son Yehoyachin, also known as Yechaniah, and Sidkiyahu. So a mere 3 months after the Gemara mentions. One second. Yeah, Yehoyachin, right? Yehoyachin. So Yehoyachin is the grandson of Yoshiyahu, and then the next king is Sidkiyahu. So he's the second to last king of Yehuda. So Nebuchadnezzar, you know, I don't know if he what the story was. I guess he wasn't happy with what he was doing over there, but he said he wanted him, and it sounds like he went with him. That's the way it sounds like, and that's what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said that it's Shar Yechanya. Yechanya is Yehoyachin. That's the same person. It says that this is where he took leave. He went to the Beis Hamikdash to take leave before he went to with Nebuchadnezzar. So that's why it's called Shar Yechanya. Let me see what he says here. One second. Yeah, he says his reign was cut short when Nebuchadnezzar besieged the city and took the entire royal household captive. Before he led off to exile, Yechaniah entered the courtyard to prostrate, and then he exited the courtyard to this way. And remember, it says in the Megillah, like with Mordecai, it says, "Shar Hoglam Yerushalayim, Imagla Shar Hoglatayim Yechoniam Melech Yehuda," that he was exiled with Yechaniah. That's like it's coming in. The destruction's coming, but it's coming like piecemeal. All right, but meanwhile, Nebuchadnezzar left Sidkiyahu there a little bit of time. All right. So that's it. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? All right, let's go to the next Mishnah. Okay, so we're on Yud Zayin Amud Beis Halacha Gimel. Manitin, Shloshasar Shulchanot Ayu B'Mikdash. There were 13 tables in the Beis Hamikdash. So Shmona Shoshayish Bevein HaMitbachayim. 8 were marble tables in like the butchering area. And those when they shech the animals, he says Shalihim Adichim in a Kravayim. In other words, they would clean out the innards of the animal there. In other words, they want to use it as a korban. That's they are korban out, but we want to clean. They have to clean the animals out. In other words, they got a lot of refuse in their gut. He says, so those are 8 tables, and we said that in total, or is in the Beis Hamikdash total, if you would look, you know, like take the total accounting, there'd be 13 tables. Ushnayim b'ma'arav hakevesh, there were 2 tables near the western part of the ramp of the mizbeach, the mizbeach ha'ola, echad shoshayish v'echad shel kesef, one of marble, one of silver. Al shoshayish notnim et ha'evarim. In other words, they're going to bring the evarim, the limbs of the korban up. Yeah, I mean, the Gemara Mida went through every day with the Korban Tamid, but there are other Korbanot that also go on the Mizbeach. But sometimes they need to, like a resting place where they're going to leave the limbs. I think the Gemara says they would put limbs on the ramp, but I guess they need a resting place also, you know, at the table. So they have a table for that. That's the marble table. Yashal Kesef Klei Sharet. And then the Klei Sharet, the tools, the Kalim they would use in the Beis Hamikdash, like knives for the shechita are one example of the klei sharet. So they would put the Gemara and the Mishnah Masechet Tamid says they had 93 kalim they would use each day. So they would put it on the silver table. So that's 2 more tables, so up to 10. Ushnayim b'ulam mibifnim al petach habayit. Then there were 2 tables in the vestibule, like the antechamber in the Beis Hamikdash. Echad shoshayish v'echad shel zahav, one of marble and a gold. Al shoshayish notnim lechem apanim b'chnisato. On the marble one, they would put the lechem apanim. And it was the coming in with lechem apanim. They rest lechem apanim on the marble table. Yal shel zahav b'siato. And then they had a gold table where they would rest the lechem upon him. In other words, on Shabbos, they're putting the new lechem upon him in, taking the old lechem upon him out. So the new lechem upon him, they would rest on the marble table before they bring it to the shulchan. And then on the way out, they would put the take out the old lechem upon him, put it on the gold table. Shemalin b'kod shalom aridin. It means that that first it's on marble, and then you put it on gold. The shulchan itself is gold. Then when I take it out, I'm not going to go back to like silver or something like that. I'm going to say gold, and it's because it's like a high level of kedusha or represents that. He says, "Echad shazah mibifnim." So we're up to 12 tables. Then we have one table, the shulchan inside. Shalav lechem haparim tamid. The lechem haparim was there. Okay. Any questions on the Mishnah?
Are the kalim the klei sharet? Are they matechet or kesef?
Well, kesef is a form of matechet. I don't know what you mean by matechet. In other words, but
is it a cheaper metal or is it silver like the shulchan?
Yeah, I'm not sure about all the kalim. I'm not sure.
Right. And also the significance of the shloshasar again, the 13.
Don't know. All right, let me see further.
Shloshasar midaya.
Yeah, I got it. All right. So there's an article waiting for you to write, Fern. Okay, let's take a look. Okay, I'm going further in the Gemara, unless there's any other questions. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tani al shel kesef. Now, in the Bryce, there was a Bryce that said that we said there were two tables in the Beis HaMikdash when you enter the Ulam, one of marble and one of gold. And they would rest the lechem upon him on the marble one on the way inside. But the Braisa says that one was silver and one was gold, not marble, silver. So it skips parentheses. Rabbi Yossi, B'shem Rabbi Shmuel Bar, Rabbi Yitzchak says, and Rabbi Hanani Matiba, B'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Hanani would be inclined to say this name, Rabbi Yochanan, Leit Kan Shel Kesef. He says, that's not correct. It was not a silver table. He says, Nei Shehu Martiach. He says, The silver would be hot. You know, it's an Eretz Israel. Things are warm, and metal, you know, contains heat, and so it would be a hot table. So, so it would cause the bread to rot. In other words, they're going to put the bread there, and it'll rot. So the Gemara says, but lo chein tani is acham and anisim shna subveda mikdash shekshem shiyu manichim otochom kachayu motzino tochom. He says, but wasn't this one of the miracles in the Beis HaMikdash? They would bring the bread warm and fresh, and then when they would remove it a week later, or it's really coming out like 9 days later, is what Chazal teaches, baked on a Friday, and you take it down the following Shabbos, so it comes out to be 9 days, it would also be warm and fresh. Shneamar, it says, and this is a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, with lasum lechem chom biyom hilacho, that the bread was nice and warm, you know, just when it was removed. So what do we need to have a marble table? We could do silver table. It doesn't make a difference if the table's hot or not. We have miracles. So Rabbi Shuban Levi Amar, Emas Kirin Maasei Nisim. It means, like, Ein Somchin Al Anes. In other words, a miracle did occur, but we have to do what we can do, and we shouldn't rely on the miracle. We have to do what we can to, like, in the natural way of things, to preserve it. A miracle occurs, fine. All right. Baun Kume Rabbi Ila, they asked before Rabbi Ila, there's different ways to explain this question, but the way the article has it is, let's say I have lechem upon him, it's supposed to stay on the shulchan for a week. Let's say I don't have bread to replace it. Can I just leave it there for another week? So he says, Amar Lon, so he said to us, K'tiv, v'natal shulchan lechem panim l'fanai tamid. You should leave lechem panim l'fanai tamid. It should always be on the shulchan. He says, lechem panim afilu pasul, it was even as pasul. So there's a question whether you have the words afilu pasul, and if you look at the gra, he takes those words out. He says, afilu hu kama yamim. So it's a questionable whether we should have the girsa afilu pasul. So it could be that you would have it, but not learn it literally. But even if it's a couple of times, the idea being, I should leave lechem upon him, even if it's an overtime, leave it there on the shulchan. All right. Okay. Any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything I did so far? All right. I'm going to go on. Okay. We're 10 lines from the bottom.
Wait, I have a question.
But you can't eat it, right? You cannot eat it.
Who cannot eat it? The Lekonim are going to eat the lechem upon him.
Even the week later, even the week after.
What do you mean? The one that went into overtime. You mean? You mean, yes, the regular lechem, yes, upon him, or the one in overtime?
No, the one that went to overtime. The regular one.
Overtime. If I understand pasul, if I say that the gears of the Gemara is pasul, and I understand that literally, then I cannot eat it. But if I say like the gears of the gra, that just means even if it's over going a couple of days, or if I understand pasul doesn't mean literally, then I could eat it. So it's not clear. All right?
I have a question.
Yeah, quickly. Chop, chop. What's up?
We know that the shkolim, we know that all the money from the taxes that were collected went for the maintenance. But what was the source of all the gold, the silver, the marble? Where did all that wealth come from?
Okay, first of all, again, the machzeh shekel are not for the maintenance. The machzeh shekel are for the korbanot tzibur, right? Those were the sacrifices. There was a different fund for Bet HaKabayit, for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. So when they built the Beis HaMikdash, first of all, people can donate gold and silver. And when they built the Beis HaMikdash, it was required that certain things be with gold and silver. If you look in Chumash, when they built the Mishkan, so they gave gold and silver and things like that. Okay, I'm going to move forward in the Gemara. Now, 10 lines to the bottom. Now, the Gemara says, Asra Shulchanot Asa Shlomo. So Shlomo Melech, please mute yourself, Ruth. So Shlomo Melech, when he built the Beis HaMikdash, he he built another 10 tables. It means like the shulchan for lechem apanim, he built another 10 tables like it. Dechtiv vayash shulchanot asara, vayenach beheichal, chamisham yimin, chamisham yismol. He put it in the heichal. Heichal is the covered portion of the Beis HaMikdash. He put five on the right and five on the left. So the Gemara says, in Tamar, Chamisha B'Darom, what does it mean five on the right and five on the left? So if the point of orientation is the entranceway of the Beis HaMikdash, so I'm entering the Beis HaMikdash, so the Shulchan is on my right and the menorah is on my left. The Shulchan is in the north and the menorah is in the south. So if it means five on the right and five on the left, so in Tamar, Chamisha B'Darom, Chamisha B'Tzafon, if I say five tables on the south and five in the north, the shulchan, in order to be kasher, to have the lechem upon him, and we'll come to this in a minute, has to be in the north. He says, you'll put the shulchan in the north. So what does the pasuk mean, five to the right and five to the left? Means the point of orientation is not the entranceway of the heichal, the point of orientation is the shulchan. So the shulchan's in the north, but vis-a-vis the shulchan, there were five to the north of it and five to the south, but all in the northern part of the heichal. So the Gemara says that they would always put the lechem upon him on the shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu. It says the pasuk in Malachim, the shulchan had the lechem upon him. Rabbi Yossi, Bei Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yossi, son of Rabbi Yehuda, says, Al Kulana Yamasadir. It's not true. He would put lechem upon him on all the tables. So there's a question I had to understand this line. Shinemar et a shulchan rod, but al lehem lechem hapanim. He quotes a pasuk in Divrei Yamim. He says, so one shot is that they would alternate. One week this table, one week that table, one week the other table. Or that they would put the lechem upon him on the main shulchan, but they would have other loaves of lechem upon him on these other tables. That's another pshat. Okay, let me just do a few more lines, then I'll pause. We'll take some questions, and that'll be it for today. Okay, so three lines from the bottom. So Tani Mizrach Umarav Hayinatunim Divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe says that we said Shlomo Melch made 10 shulchanot, and we'll see tomorrow he made 10 menorot also. So with 10 menorahs, 10 shulchans. So he says the shulchans have a length to them. Each shulchan is 2 amot in length. So the Brisa says they were lined up Mizrach Umarav. Mizrach Umarav, and it was when you enter the Heichal, you're on an east-west axis. In other words, you're walking, you're entering from the east, and you're heading west is where the Kodesh Kodashim is. And to your right is the north, and to your left is the south. To your right is the Shulchan, to your left is the menorah. So he says that these tables were lined up on an east-west axis. So in other words, he's got 10 tables, and there'll be like two lines of five tables each. And each table is 2 amot, right? So it'll be, I think it'll be 10 amot and 10 amot. He says, that's according to Reb Lezer, Divrei Rebbe. Reb Lezer, Bei Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Lezer, the son of Reb Shimon, says, Safon Vidarom Hayunatunim. He says they were lined up north-south. So Mandamar Mizrach Umarav Nicha, Kulan Ruyan L'Sherut. So if they're north-south, I understand. I could, in other words, they're in the place. In other words, all the Shulchanot can fit in the north, and they're lined up head to tail. They would fit in well. They would fit in. So let me just take a look. One second. He says, one second.
It's on 18A1, the picture.
Yeah.
In the art scroll.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. It's not two rows. It looks like one row. It looks like one row. He says that. One second. Right. So, in other words, I have 10 tables, they're each 2 amot. It'll go 20 amot. So that's the way the first opinion with Rebbe. So it'll occupy space of 20 amot. And the shulchan has to be in the western part of the heichal. So So we're going to use up the 20 amot there. In other words, the light. In other words, let me see if we have dimensions here. Yeah. So in other words, the heichal is 40 amot in length. So the shulchanot will occupy 20 of those amot. 20. In other words, so 10 shulchanot lined up head to tail will be 20 amot. But the Gemara says, so mandam ar mizrach amar of nicha, kulan ruin lisherut. So they're all in the right place. They're good. Mandamar tzafon bedarom, but if I'm going to line it up north to south, nimsa shulchan bedarom. So some of the shulchanot are going to be in the southern part, which isn't going to work too well. Now, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved within that opinion, but the he says in footnote 28, he says that according to the Bavli, the Gemara has a number of other questions and does resolve it. And it says that they weren't all in a single row. In other words, you only run into a problem if they're all in a single row. But the Bavli says that they're not necessarily in a single row. So I can line them up then that they'll all be in the north, even though they're lined up, even though they're oriented. In other words, the length of the shulchan could be north to south, but I could still fit the shulchanot in two rows in the north. You understand what I'm saying? In other words,
so there were really 11 shulchanot, and these
10? 11 shulchanot. All right, let me just do quickly with this, and then we'll have a thing. okay, so this is from the Al Hadaf. So we said Shlomo Melech also, he made 10 shulchanot, and he also made, we'll see in tomorrow's Gemara, he made 10 menorot also, 10 menorahs. So the Gemara cites one opinion that Shlomo used only the original Shulchan, a menorah from Moshe Rabbeinu's time. The other 10 were just for display. So one opinion is, it's just, you know, it's nice. You look at it, you don't do anything with it. But Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda disagrees and maintains that Shlomo Melech's 10 Shulchan on menorot were used in addition to Moshe Rabbeinu's. So Rashi explains in Menacho that Rabbi Yossi does not mean that they lit all 11 menorot daily and placed lech upon them and all the shulchanot simultaneously. Rather, it means they alternated between them, sometimes using one, sometimes another. So Rashi says, this week we'll use this shulchan, next week this one, and this week this menorah, that menorah, and so forth. The Medrash cited in the Yalkut Shimoni says in the Beis HaMikdash, they would arrange the lechem upon him on the shulchan of Moshe first, kindle Moshe's menorahs first. The Medrash thus indicates, contrary to Rashi, that according to Rabbi Yossi, they actually used all the menorahs and shulchanot daily. The Meshech HaKhama explains why Shlomo added 10 menorahs and shulchanot. So before the Tezber, I think in the art school they had something to say that the additional ones didn't have, I don't know if they had the full panoply of all lechem upon him, but they had lechem upon him on them. I don't know. So he says, Meshech HaKhama explains that why Shlomo added 10 menorahs and shulchanot. So he figured that the base of Mikdash was 10 times larger than the Mishkan, so 10 times more. you need more menorot, and once you have menorah, you have the shulchanot. In other words, one menorah provides sufficient light for the Mishkan. I need 11 menorot for the base of Mikdash. That's what he's figuring. Once I have menorot, I need shulchanot to correspond to the menorot. Okay, who's got questions, comments, thoughts on anything we did so far? Everybody good? All right. So learning today was Lilui Neshama of Gavriel Aronoff's brother, Immanuel ben Avraham, Zichrono Levracha. All right. Let me just